When it comes to a wedding, there are all sorts of plans that have to be made. Lori and I actually had downsized wedding plans from what we started with. We were in the process of, we had a location where we were going to have it. We knew who was going to be officiating. We had a lot of things figured out. And then a lot of things got in the way. But even though we downsized our wedding plans, there were still a lot of things to organize. The date, the time, the location, the photographer, who's going to officiate, the rings, the vows, the dress, the replacement dress, because the house fire damaged the first dress that Lori had. So we had the rush of trying to find a new dress in time for the new date. A wedding day is full of details, but one of the more crucial details of that day is the invitations. Without the invitations, you would end up with an empty church or an empty chapel or an empty outside venue wherever you're having your wedding at. Nobody to share that special day with. The actual invitation to a wedding is just as important as the wedding itself. For those who want to make a list, invitation is another one of my favorite words. One of the reasons it's one of my favorite words and it's on my favorite word list is because I see it used consistently, both explicitly and implicitly in Scripture. Follow me from the lips of Jesus. Follow me is an invitation. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, is an invitation. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. Thy kingdom come is another invitation we hear in the prayer that Jesus teaches his disciples. The beginning of a new year is a time when people start putting into motion a series of decisions and plans that they're going to do in the next year. Personal resolutions. I'm not going to eat as much this year. I'm going to exercise a little bit more this year. I'm going to read more this year, perhaps reading through the scripture, reading through the Bible in one of those yearly plans. In many ways, New Year's resolutions are a way of making plans for what you want your year to look like when all is said and done. Much like making plans for a wedding and what you want that wedding day and that or that particular celebration to look like. In the same way, invitations are an important part of a wedding. Invitations are important when it comes to our new year here at Calvary. Have you ever been so busy that you forgot an important detail? You had a large event going on, there's a lot of things to figure out, and in the middle of it, you forget something small but significant. That's always my fear when I coordinate for the Quiz Fest tournament that I deal with. There's a lot of things going on, and every time it gets down to those last 2 days, I'm going through my checklist wondering, okay, did I forget anything? Is there anything? And one year, there was actually a time where I had ordered the awards a little bit later than I normally did, and there was a shipping problem that came up, so we didn't have the awards in time for the tournament itself. So every year, I was always paranoid about the shipping information, make sure there's no problems there. When it comes to the life of the church, it's really easy to be busy. I don't know if you realize this yet or not, but there are a lot of Sundays in a year and a lot of Wednesdays in a year. The downside to all of that is that it's really easy to lose track of the reason in the midst of the routine. And when it comes to the reasons why we do what we do, when it comes to a Sunday or a Wednesday or a particular ministry evening, what we say about the matter when it comes to our purpose, we don't actually have a whole lot of say in the purpose behind what we do. God decides what the purpose of the church is. We don't get to decide what the purpose of the body of Christ is. God reveals it to us through Scripture, his purpose for the church. Over the years, I've seen all sorts of mission statements that churches have crafted in their own particular way, and after a while, they start to sound a lot the same. They have a lot of the same ideas, the same imagery going on, and so they start to sound the same. The mission of the church here in Crestwood is the same as the mission of the church in Kankakee, which is the same as where Lori's parents are in Holland, which is the same mission of the church in Australia or Africa or anywhere else in the world. The mission is still the same. The methods for achieving that particular mission might change greatly depending on what the church context is, but the mission is still the same. One of the bigger things on the to-do list for 2018 for Calvary in this new year is shaping a mission statement that can be easily remembered and repeated. A mission statement that isn't remembered and isn't a part of our conversation, isn't a regular part of our conversation, isn't really too helpful. Because the purpose of a mission statement is to be unifying and guiding our steps as we make ministry decisions together. Putting together that mission statement is going to be a process that we'll be going through with the board in the coming months. But regardless of the specific form of the mission statement, the issue of invitations can't be overlooked. There are invitations we receive and there are invitations that we send out. God's invitation to the church. God's invitation to the church is this: come out from them and be separate. Make no mistake about it, we are invited by God to live differently than our world. A lamp on a lampstand, a city on a hill, the salt of the earth. Our lives ought to stand in stark contrast with the lives of others in this world. We just spent a couple months actually looking at the lives of people who were recognized for their faith, people who God called out, and they lived their life of faith, and they stood out from the people around them. People can stand out for all sorts of reasons. This past summer, I had my class reunion, and one of the things we did at our class reunion, was get out all these pictures of when we were kids growing up together. I had the same group of classmates from kindergarten all the way through high school, and so we had lots of pictures to go through where we're all a part of the same pictures. And there was one picture that stood out because one of the girls in our class was extraordinarily tall. So in junior high, we, you know, everybody goes through growth spurts around the junior high time. Well, she got a double portion of it, and she was just towering over all of us. She was as tall, taller than our teacher even. She ended up getting to 6'3", between 6'2 and 6'3", which made me extremely jealous because my goal and my desire as a basketball player was to get, if I can get to 6'2", man, that would really be helpful for my basketball abilities as a point guard. But I stopped at 5'11", and she kept on going. People can stand out for all sorts of reasons. Some people will change their color to weird and bright colors, in order to stand out. Some people will get piercings and rods and things in their ears, all kinds of different things, just to stand out visually. But what about the church? How is the church supposed to stand out in the world? We stand out because we have been given unique weapons. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world, is what we read in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. I intended actually a couple weeks ago when we were talking about peace and war, I intended to talk about this actual passage in 2 Corinthians, but just in the middle of everything else, it got left out. In a world full of perpetual conflict, Jesus did not leave us here defenseless. God does not give us peace to numb the pain of an onslaught, but then also provide us no way of putting an end to the onslaught itself. Our response to evil and violence and persecution is not to just simply sit there and take it. We've been given the full armor of God, and we have the opportunity to fight spiritual battles using spiritual weapons. The world has its way of dealing with conflict, and we have ours as a church. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. We stand out also because we've been called to a unique mission. Weapons and tools serve a specific function when it comes to achieving a particular mission. We are given weapons unlike the weapons of this world because we have a mission that is unlike the mission of this world. The restoration and the redemption of the world that has a very different mission than ours. Our world is in pursuit of things like power and possessions. Maybe you've seen someone wearing a shirt with this slogan before: the one with the most toys win. That's a nice thing to think about. Oh, yeah, I just collect a bunch of stuff. I like toys just as much as anybody, especially around Christmas time. It's all about having the biggest house, the hottest spouse, and the fast and fancy car to get around in. One of the more consistent paths to those possessions is the accumulation of power. Powerful people generally work at a higher pay grade than everyone else. So by working up the ladder of success, you get the possessions that go along with the power. You may not have the actual time to play with the toys and enjoy those possessions, but you do at least have them. The pursuit of power and possessions leaves casualties. The march to the top sometimes involves stepping on others, taking advantage of others, disposing of others, dethroning others. And it's in this gruesome aftermath of the battles for power and possessions that the church has some work to do. A distorted or non-existent relationship with the Creator of all things has disrupted the way in which people relate to the people and things of this world. The way to restore proper relationships within creation, the path toward people treating each other the way they ought to be treated, and caring for the world as it ought to be cared for, that path starts with restoring a right relationship with God, who created and loves us, and created and loves everything we see. A few weeks ago, while doing my Black Friday shopping, there was a movie I absolutely had to buy. It was on my list, and as soon as Walmart put out their little thing that showed what movies they were going to have for sale, it's the first one that I was looking for. It was a movie called Hacksaw Ridge. Maybe you saw it. Got to see it in the theater, and it's one of those movies, as soon as I saw it, I knew I'd be buying it for myself. If you want to watch this movie with me, feel free. Let me know. We'll set up a time and we'll watch it. It's a great movie. There is a lot of violence in it, but it's a war movie, so you can expect that. One of the reasons it's on my favorite movies list is I like movies that are based on real events. I don't read a lot of like fiction stuff. I like stuff that's based on real life, real stories, real people, real situations. And I also have an interest in, because of my birthday, the December 7th thing, I like World War II and Depression era movies. So this movie fits the bill on both of those accounts. Not only does it meet the criteria of being about a true situation and being from that era, but it speaks to my convictions about the call to nonviolence. In this movie, based on the life of Desmond Doss, I got to see the life of a person called to nonviolence during the most violent times our world has ever seen. Desmond is drafted into the army, yet because of his religious convictions and personal experiences, he refuses to even use or touch a gun. And for that, he is insulted, he's mocked, and assaulted, all while he's going through his basic training. And then, while going through that experience, there are attempts made to get him actually court-martialed and kicked out of the army. Desmond did not want to be a conscientious objector and stay at home while somebody else fought in his place. He insisted that he have a place in the army and that he be able to serve. And while he's there, his bravery is questioned because he must be a coward if he's not going to use a gun. His sanity is questioned because he must have some sort of a lunatic death wish in order to go into a battle like World War II without any weapons. But when all is said and done, when his story is told, he was honored and revered by everyone who served alongside him. Time and again, he risked his own life to save the life of others. He saved countless people who were wounded in battle that needed to be rescued. So like I said, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to be watching it over and over again here soon. And if you want to join me, feel free. One of my favorite quotes from that movie is this: "With the world so set on tearing itself apart, it don't seem like such a bad thing to want to put a little bit of it back together." Desmond marched into battle into the heat to the beat of a very different drum and bearing very different weapons that brought healing instead of destruction. Desmond had a different mission than the world around him. Starting next week and going all the way through Easter, Easter morning, we will be following the steps of Jesus as recorded in the book of John. Jesus marched to the beat of a very different drum. He walked in a way that disturbed people who had power and possessions, especially religious people that had power. He did not use the weapons of this world because he was on a very different mission. And so, over the next few months, we're going to get into the life of Jesus and let the life of Jesus inform our mission in this world and the tools and weapons we're going to need in order to accomplish it. So that's God's invitation to the church: come out from them and be separate. The church's invitation to God is this: here I am, send me. God's invitation to the church is to come out from the world in order to be a part of God's mission in redeeming the world. But what is our response? Is our response what I just read, "Here I am, send me," when it comes to God's mission for the church? What if, similar to a military draft, the church were to operate using some sort of a ministry draft? People who are a part of the church would have their names drawn for service, and the higher-ups would determine where we're going to push people into certain areas of ministry. We could bring you in and give you a spiritual assessment and determine where we need to put you. How would that go? I was going to pick on Paul this morning, but if Paul had filled out a ministry draft selection form, I'm sorry, Paul, it says here that you've requested to sing in the church choir, but our spiritual assessment says that's not your area of giftedness. Absolutely not. I'm pretty sure Paul would not want to be in the church choir for that. I don't think that process of ministry drafting would be effective. God is not going to force anyone into service. God may have someone thrown overboard and swallowed by a large fish because they won't do what God calls them to do, but that's not the typical norm. God does not force, God invites. And a willing spirit says, "Here I am, send me." Things work out better when things work out better when a person sings who can sing and wants to sing, when a person teaches who wants to teach and can teach when that person teaches. We live in a world where a few people play a game and millions of people watch. Whether it's the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball, there are a few people actually in the game, and there are millions of people tuning in to cheer on their favorite team. They buy the jerseys, they buy the hats, they buy the tickets, but when it comes to the game itself, they are just onlookers. The perspective of a fan and the perspective of a player are vastly different. When I go to the fitness center, I am always, always, always hoping that there is someone there who is willing to play basketball. And the first thing I do when I step in the doors is I start listening to see if I can hear that basketball bouncing and know, okay, somebody's here is playing. I'm going to go find out who it is and see if they're old enough and skilled enough to be able to play some games. Whether it's playing one-on-one or playing two-on-two or if there's a lot of guys, play five-on-five, I'm always looking for an opportunity to play games. I don't mind just showing up and shooting around. That's okay. But playing in games is a very different experience. First off, you get a lot better of a workout. I can go and I can shoot around for half an hour and I might work up a sweat a little bit, but 5 minutes into a game and I'm breathing heavy and I'm sweaty and I'm getting the workout that I really want and I really need. And in a game, you also have the challenge of having defenders. It's not just shooting around and open shot after open shot. You've got somebody contesting you and making it a challenge. It's not a game unless there's an opposing challenger making your shot attempts difficult. There are some people who are very good shooters. They spend a lot of time practicing, but if you put a defender on them, they can't make a single bucket because they've not practiced against defense. They just shoot around a lot, and they're good when they're just by themselves. When I'm watching a basketball game, it's an entirely different perspective. As you can imagine, since I love basketball, I'm very talkative during games. I'm making comments about the shot attempts, making comments about the decision-making of players, the calls of the officials. A few years ago, I actually got licensed as an official. I wanted to be able to do that, so I took some different courses just to be able to officially referee games in the state of Illinois. So Lori can vouch for the fact that I'm always talking during the games. And one of the funny things is when I make a comment and the sports announcer says exactly what I just said, I'm like, see, I'm right. The sports announcer agrees with me. It happens all the time. My mind keeps an internal running of stats and things like that as I'm watching a game. Oh, he's made 4 threes already. Then the commenter, that's 4 threes for whoever it was. Yeah, I know. I'm keeping track. Perhaps you've heard the song, Put Me In, Coach, I'm Ready to Play. Today, look at me. I can be center field. When it comes to the mission God has for the church, the ones who get to be a part of that mission are the ones who surrender their will and volunteer to do God's will. And God's desire is for the entire church to be on the playing field working together, not sitting on the sidelines, not wearing replica jerseys, not just shooting around with no intentions of actually ever getting into a game, all of God's people, all on mission. So we have God's invitation, the church, we have the church's invitation to God, and then we have the church's invitation to the world. This morning, I actually want to close talking about a very different kind of invitation. There's God, like I just said, God's invitation to us and our invitation to God. But this part, when it comes to our invitation to the world, this has to do with our mission in the world. But it's something that doesn't have to wait for us to discover, as, like I said, we're going to be spending time talking about the mission of the church over the next few months. But this is something that doesn't have to wait until we shape that mission statement. It would be really easy as a pastor to sit up here on a soapbox and talk about inviting people to church. But to be absolutely honest, I'm not the slightest bit interested in doing that. It's good, invite people to church, great, but what I really want to talk about when it comes to our invitation to the world is this. It's something I think is actually more important, and it's about inviting people into your lives and into your homes in 2018. I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 12 real quick. There you go. Matthew chapter 12, verse 46. Just a few verses. While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you." He replied to him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." Have you ever been in the middle of something only to be needed by someone important in your life? What did you do? Maybe you said, put somebody on hold. Oh, here, hold on. I need to take this other call. Maybe a loved one was calling. Or maybe you decided you needed to cancel plans and put whatever was going on hold because you needed to take care of something else for somebody else more important. The response of Jesus in this passage might make you feel a little bit uneasy. He is interrupted with the news that there are more important people outside who need his attention. his mother and his brothers. Or at least from the viewpoint of the person delivering the news, these people might seem to be more important. Jesus' view, however, on who his family is and how important they are is wider than what you and I might be comfortable with. Did you know that the most random person in this world you will ever come across, whether it's through a drive-thru window or at a grocery store or at a library or at a fitness center, that random person is just as valuable in God's eyes as the person you love and adore and cherish most in this world? You may not like it, but that's true. And because they are valuable in God's eyes and they are worthy, because they are valuable in God's eyes, they are worthy of our time and attention. Now, I want you to hear me clearly on this. What I am not saying is that it's okay to neglect the people who are nearest to you for the sake of somebody else because somebody else is just as valuable as them, even though they're a stranger. I'm not saying that, but I am willing to say this. If your loved ones require 100% of your every waking hour in order for them to feel loved and cared for, then either you're doing a very bad job at taking care of and loving those people, or those loved ones have unrealistic expectations that you will never, ever be able to fulfill. And don't think for a second that I'm going to be willing to step in and determine, are you just not fulfilling your expectations, or do they have too big of expectations? If you don't have time for anyone outside of your family circle, that's problematic. If the only people you interact with are church people, that is problematic. And if the church and its programs are the reason for being too busy to develop and invest in relationships with people outside of the church, that too is problematic. If the mission of the church is to actively go out into the world and make disciples, then it is counterproductive to that mission to be in a situation where no one has the time to go out and actually make disciples. So that's where this thing that comes in with your bulletin. Maybe get one of these out. Maybe you've already opened yours up. These are just little invitation cards we put together. Maybe you've already went through and looked at it and read it. This is something that you can put up as a very easy visual reminder. Apologies if pink's not your color, but these are had the space that we needed for what we wanted. So maybe sell some space on your refrigerator, or maybe you have a place on a bathroom mirror. But what I want you to do with this is I want you to put this somewhere where you see it on a regular basis. Put this someplace where it reminds you of a couple different things. And the first thing is this. Pray for the mission of the church. This church. Not the church global, but praying for this church. You can pray for me. You can pray for the board. You can pray for the particular ministries of the church. You can pray for the congregation as a whole. You can pray for guidance. Pray for willingness to take the next step. There are all sorts of things for you to pray for as the Lord leads. But primarily, pray for God's work to be done in Calvary in 2018. And then at the bottom of the invitation is an RSVP section. Many times an RSVP wants to know if you are bringing anyone with you, you plus one or you plus a guest. What I want to know and what I want you to consider is this. Who will you invite into your life in this year? In 2018, you will have 12 months or 52 weeks or 365 days or 8,760 hours, or 525,600 minutes to invest. After you take out all the time that you need for yourself and all the time you need for your loved ones, how much time is left, and how will you use it? If it's not a priority to invest in the lives of others, it probably isn't going to happen. Fruitful relationships don't happen by accident. And they may start by accident, they may start by a random crossing of paths that you didn't really intend on, but they never ever grow by accident. Who are you going to purposefully invite into the flow of your life for the glory of God and the mission of the church? And hopefully, this little card, like I said, put it someplace where you can see it on a regular basis as you go through your day or go through your week. Hopefully, it can remind you to be praying for the church and praying for and considering people that you want to invite into your life. This morning, we're actually going to close with a song of invitation, the invitation for God's Spirit to come and work in our midst. All it takes is a willing heart for God's Spirit to work. Here I am, send me. In Revelation 3:20, we read these words, "Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. And the question is, will we invite the Lord in to accomplish his work here at Calvary? Go ahead and stand. We're going to sing a couple times.